a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
House of Representatives will now come to order. Leading us in our prayer today is Pastor J.P. Mosley with the Pier Fort Pier Ministerial Association. Leading us in our Pledge of Allegiance are pages Celeste LaCourcier from Eureka and Carolyn Perry, Caroline Perry from Reliance. Let us pray. Great merciful Father, we thank you for this opportunity that the House of Representatives can meet, can discuss the agenda for the day. We pray that you would indeed give them the wisdom and the grace that they need to be about the business of this day. We also look forward to a day where we can celebrate the great men of old who have led this country. And we thank you for their presence. In Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen. Clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Anderson, Bartling, Boland, Kamak, Campbell, Carson, Consett, Craig, Cronin, Dryden, Duvall, Eklund, Erickson, Feichert, Feinstein, Gibson, Greenfield, Donhager, Jenna Hager, Hayek, Hawks, Holly, Heinemann, Heinert, Hickey, Hoffman, Hunhoff, Johns, Kaiser, Killer, Hirschman, Kopp, Langer, Latterell, Lust, Magstead, May, Mickelson, Munsterman, Nelson, Nordstrom, Olson, Otten, Parsley, Peterson, Qualm, Rasmussen, Ring, Romkema, Rounds, Rosum, Russell, Schaefer, Shanefish, Schramp, Sly, Soley, Solem, Stalser, Steele, Stevens, Tolson, Tyler, Vercio, Werner, Westra, Weck, Wink, Wismer, Speaker Gosh.
Here.
Mr. Speaker, a quorum is present.
Approval of the journal.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Chief Clerk of the House has had under consideration the House Journal of the 19th day. All errors typographical or otherwise are duly marked in the temporary journal for correction, and we hereby move the adoption of the report. Respectfully submitted, Brian G. Gosh, Chair.
Those in favor of approving the journal will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Journal is approved. With us today on behalf of Representatives Cronin and Hoffman, we have the Gettysburg Civics class with teachers Mrs. Peppel and Mrs. Larson. If you're here, please stand. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Class and helping me in the front, helping in other things, and the camera as well.
The Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources respectfully reports and chair. The Committee on Health and Human Services respectfully reports that Senate Bill 89 do pass. Scott Munsterman, chair. The Committee on Transportation respectfully reports that Senate Bill 93 do pass. Senate Bill 61 and 95 do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Senate Bill 103 do pass as amended. Mike Vercio, chair. The Committee on Taxation respectfully reports that Senate Bill 138 do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. House Bill 1121 do pass as amended, and House Bill 1205 was deferred to the 41st legislative day. Brock L. Greenfield, Chair. The Committee on Local Government respectfully reports that House Bill 1231 and 1234 were deferred to the 41st legislative day. Tim Rounds, Chair.
Messages.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to return herewith HCR 1015, in which the Senate has concurred. Also, Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to return herewith House Bill 1048, 1053, and 1080, which have passed the Senate without change. Also, Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to transmit herewith SCR 3, which has been adopted by the Senate, and your concurrence is respectfully requested. Also, Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to transmit herewith Senate Bills 39, 125, 150, 154, and 182, which have passed the Senate, and your favorable consideration is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Jeanette Secretary.
Motions and resolutions. Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we all know, Valentine's Day is coming up shortly, and the leadership team are trying to be good role models and examples for everyone else, and so we decided to give a gift or a special recognition for the people in your lives that try and make you look good on a day-to-day basis. And so with that in mind, the leadership team would like to present some roses to our chief clerk, Arlene.
I think we have fourth grade elementary school here on behalf of Representatives Fred Romkema and Tim John, Spearfish Creekside Elementary teachers Carlene Burke Christensen and Kathy Christensen. Are they here yet? They're on the other side. Okay, we'll look for them again. Also, before she gets away, or I saw her getting up, we have the doctor of the day. You know her better for running for the U.S. Senate. But today, she is helping us in the needs that we have in the Capitol here. She is our doctor of the day. We appreciate her taking time out of her business. It's Dr. Annette Bosworth. She is an internal medicine physician with Independent Medicine Professionals, LLC of T. She received her MD from the University of South Dakota School of Medicine in 1998 and completed the University of Utah Internal Medicine Residency Program in 2001. She's also a member of the South Dakota State Medical Association. Please thank her and welcome her with your applause.
House Concurrent Resolution 1017, urging Congress, the White House, Office of National Drug Control Policy, the United States Department of Justice, and the United States Drug Enforcement Administration to recognize industrial hemp as a valuable agricultural commodity. Representative May moves that HCR 1017 be adopted.
The motion is to adopt HCR 1017. There has been a second. Are there remarks? Representative May.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I come before you today with this resolution 1017 to encourage you to look into the industrial hemp business. For the first time in decades, the federal government is now allowing the farmers to cultivate hemp. This passage was in the Farm Bill this year for industrial hemp. It's legal on the federal level and is now clearing the way for industrial hemp pilot programs in the states such as Colorado, Washington, California, Kentucky, Maine, Montana, North Dakota, Oregon, Vermont, and West Virginia, where the plant, the growing is already of the plant is already legal. The provisions are going to allow the universities and now our state departments of ag to grow hemp for academic and agricultural research purposes. However, it will only apply to the states where industrial hemp farming is already legal under the state law. For a little bit of history, because I've had a lot of the young people ask me about hemp, and so I'm going to give a little brief history on it. So most of you are of the age that you know about it, but we have a lot of young people that don't know a lot about it. So hemp hasn't been grown in the U.S. since the plant was banned in our anti-drug efforts through the 1970 Controlled Substance Act. I find it exciting for the overall economy and the legitimacy of hemp. Hemp's return, it'll clear the way for the U.S. farmers and, more importantly, our South Dakota farmers to compete in an industry currently dominated by China. In 2011, the U.S. imported $11.5 million worth of legal hemp products, up from $1.4 million in 2000. Most of that growth was seen in hemp seed and hemp oil, which finds its way into granola bars and other products. Our estimates place the U.S. 2000 hemp sales at $500 million. Hemp has thousands of uses, from rope and clothing to soap and lotions, nutritional additives, and everything from milk to cooking oil. Hemp is an ancient plant. hemp weaving fiber began over 10,000 years ago. Carbon tests have suggested that the use of wild hemp dates as far back as 8,000 BC. In Great Britain, hemp cultivation dates back to 800 AD. In the 16th century, Henry VIII encouraged farmers to plant the crop extensively to provide materials for the British Navy fleet. A steady supply of hemp was needed for the construction of the battleships and their components. Riggings, pennants, sails were all made from hemp fiber and oil. Hemp paper was used for the maps and the logs and even the Bibles that the sailors brought on board with them. In the 17th century, American farmers in Virginia, Massachusetts, Connecticut were ordered by law to grow hemp. By the early 18th century, a person could be sentenced to jail if they weren't growing hemp for their land. Hemp was considered to be legal tender. For over 200 years in the colonial America, hemp was currency that one could use to pay their taxes with, which is not something that I would suggest anybody here tries today. Interestingly enough, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson both grew hemp. Ben Franklin himself owned a mill that made hemp paper, and our Declaration of Independence was drafted on hemp paper. Thomas Jefferson, the American founding father, the principal author of the Declaration of Independence, and the third president of the United States said, "Hemp is the first necessity to the wealth and protection of the country," unquote. The 1850 U.S. Census documented approximately 8,400 hemp plantations of at least 2,000 acres. An interesting situation arose during World War II as American farmers were prohibited from producing hemp because of the 1937 law. However, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor halted the importation of Manila hemp from the Philippines, promoting the USDA to rethink their agenda and creating a call to action with the release of the film Hemp for Victory, motivating American farmers to grow hemp for the war effort. The government formed a private company called War Hemp Industries to subsidize hemp cultivation. 1 million acres of hemp were grown across the Midwest as part of this program. But as soon as the war ended, all the hemp processing plants were shut down and the industry again disappeared. In 2013, four North American Industrial Hemp Council members were instrumental in efforts to have Kentucky lead the nation in re-commercializing industrial hemp. The four board members provided detailed information on the no-drug character of industrial hemp, its economic potential, and practical information on how hemp would help limit illicit marijuana cultivation. Among the report, many points were addressed. The report first showed that in the 15 years since Canada legalized industrial hemp in 98, Canada has experienced no illicit marijuana planting or co-mingling on farms of hemp. The report explains why cross-pollination would result in an industrial hemp crop ruining a marijuana crop growing in Kentucky by lowering the drug content of marijuana. The report also lists the many commercial uses of industrial hemp, including using hemp fiber for lightweight panels for the appliances and auto industries, and using hemp oils for everything from high-value food and cosmetic products to biofuels. In Kentucky, hearings from former CIA Director Jim Woosley, who was part of the panel, directly challenged a state police commissioner's contention that industrial hemp fields would provide cover for growing marijuana. Echoing the points in Dr. Melberg's report, Mr. Woosley explained that industrial hemp would make it virtually impossible to grow marijuana anywhere nearby due to cross-pollination. The Drug Enforcement Administration, or the DEA, kicked its lobbying against legalizing industrial hemp into high gear, hoping to block an amendment in the House that would decriminalize the crop for research purposes. A copy of talking points from the DEA was circulating among the members of Congress to press them to impose the amendment, raising the seemingly idea that the government using its resources to lobby itself. Hemp is legal to grow in many industrial countries, including Canada, and it is legal to import in the U.S. states. As Polis, the representative from Colorado, and McDonald from Kentucky have legalized hemp growing, waiting for the final federal action that we have now seen in January 2014. I encourage everybody to please go green on this. It's good for our country, good for our farmers, and it's another avenue we have for a resource. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks? Representative Bartlett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the body. I, too, encourage you to vote favorably for House Concurrent Resolution 1017, and I'll bring a different perspective to you. My husband and I are in an ag-related business, and one of the products that we sell in our business is sisal twine, which is made out of hemp. And that is a very important product for American agriculture, for the farmers, particularly our farmers in South Dakota, because the production of hay is a huge commodity in agriculture. If you're not familiar, sisal twine is shipped into the United States from the country of Brazil. And it's not that the product itself is in short supply, but the cost of getting it here is becoming astronomical for American farmers. It is a petroleum-made product, and it is also shipped here, of course, on ships. It gets into the U.S. ports. It then has to come up to South Dakota by rail. Once it gets to Omaha by rail, it is trucked into South Dakota. So just imagine the cost of getting that product into South Dakota for the farmers of South Dakota. And so in our business, we have seen that this year the sale of sisal twine will go up, and you're going to have to understand what a bale of twine is, but it's two balls of twine that go in the baler of the farmer as they wrap the bales up for their feed. A bale of twine is going to go up at a minimum of $10 a bale this year. That's a significant cost to farmers in their operation. And so I think whatever we can do by raising products here in the United States on our own to help our own agricultural industry is very, very important. And I think this is just a starting point, and it just needs to go on further. And if you worry about, you know, the hemp and the marijuana issue, I don't think you have any concerns for that, because if you really want to get high, just come on out to the farm, get on a tractor, and I know the good representative from across the corner looking at me and smiling would love to have you come on his farm, get on his tractor, and help him bale at night. So thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the body, please support the measure.
Thank you. Further remarks? Representatives Cheech and Chong?
It's almost as if you thought I was going to make a joke. A question for the sponsor.
State your question, please. You're running out of time.
This is really serious. Yeah, this could be a 3-minute question. Would the good representative from Jackson and Shannon and Pennington County, Haakon County, Bennett County, tell me, does hemp, specifically industrial hemp, make good cover and good habitat and feed for our dwindling pheasant population?
Representative May, would you like to answer that question?
Yes, it makes real good cover. So you can kill another bird with one stone, so to speak.
Representative Don Hager, you still have the floor.
I think that says it all. Thank you.
Thank you. Further remarks on HCR 1017? Seeing none, the question before the House is adoption of HCR 1017. Those in favor will vote yay. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. The members shall proceed to vote. Representative Feinstein.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request a personal privilege.
Granted.
Mr. Speaker, it was 7 years ago today, 2007, when I introduced a lady who's behind you now. And what I asked her then, or said then, was, I'd like to introduce you to Miss Nancy Volk, and if she says yes, she'll become my wife. We've been married now for 6.5 years, and my wife, Nancy.
Welcome.
Representative Latterell and Rosam. Oh. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there are 61 yeas, 6 nays.
HCR 1017, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed, and HCR 1017 is adopted.
Representative Lust moves that HCR 1012 be deferred to Tuesday, February 18th, the 21st legislative day.
That motion having been made and seconded for HCR 1018 to be adopted is now up for consideration. Are there any remarks? Representative Gosch?
Yep.
Should I read the order, Mr. Speaker. I think we have a motion and a second on the less motion to defer HCR, one of the HCRs, to the next Tuesday, 1012. Voice vote. I do vote aye on that.
Okay, I was on my way up and didn't catch the second amendment here. All in favor of the Lust motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carried.
House Concurrent Resolution 1018, recognizing chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, as a serious and chronic disease in South Dakota. Representative Gosch moves that HCR 1018 be adopted.
Okay, that motion, having been made and seconded for HCR 1018 to be adopted, is now up for consideration. Are there any remarks? Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, last year I brought another House Concurrent Resolution on this issue to recognize November 2013 as COPD Awareness Month, and I appreciate your 70-0 vote on passing that and bringing awareness to a serious issue. This year we bring awareness to the issue again, but also ask the Department of Health to recognize it as a chronic disease. COPD, also known as chronic bronchitis and emphysema, is the third leading cause of death in the United States and is the second leading cause of disability. Pulmonary experts expect that in 2020, COPD will become the leading cause of death worldwide. And, of course, the major leading cause is smoking. Chronic lower respiratory disease accounted for 6.6% of the deaths in South Dakota in 2012. 34,000 South Dakota adults, or 5%, reported having COPD in 2012. Screening and diagnosis is critical, and until there is a cure for COPD, increased public awareness, early detection, and proper health management can slow the progression of the disease and lead to reduced costs and improve quality of life and self-sufficiency. With this resolution, the legislature encourages the South Dakota Department of Health to include COPD as a chronic health condition in its effort to address serious chronic health conditions in South Dakota by seeking out and applying for funding and grants available to provide public awareness or treatment for COPD in South Dakota. With that, I'd ask you to support me in HCR 1018.
Any further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the House is adoption of House Concurrent Resolution 1018. Those in favor vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. The members will proceed to vote. Yes, Representative Romkema.
Thank you very much. Personal privilege, please.
Granted.
We have some people up in the gallery in distinctive T-shirts. These are kids from the fourth grade at Brookside Elementary from Spearfish, South Dakota, under the tutelage of their instructors, Mrs. Burke and Mrs. Christensen. Welcome to Pierre.
Welcome to the Capitol.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there are 66 yeas, one nay.
HCR 1018, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared adopted.
House Concurrent Resolution 1019, petitioning Congress to reauthorize federally provided terrorism reinsurance for insurers. Representative Wink moves that HCR 1019 be amended as follows, and the store number is C1019FB.
Motion is to amend HCR 1019 has been seconded. Are there remarks, Representative Wink?
Representative Gosch, permission to speak to the amendment?
Granted.
Basically, it's just the amendment corrects an oversight. It deletes six words and inserts seven. On page one, line nine, it deletes natural or man-made event in and inserts other man-made event in the United States, because there was a previous natural disaster in which Hurricane Katrina, where basically the losses was $135 billion. So it just corrects that minor error, and appreciate your support.
Further remarks on the motion to amend? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion to amend will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
Representative Wink moves that HCR 1019 be adopted as amended.
Second.
Remarks on the motion to adopt HCR 1019 as amended. Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This resolution goes back to the aftermath of 9/11, and at that time we had such catastrophic losses that the insurance companies didn't know how to weigh their risk management in that, and so they started putting exclusions in their policies, and so nobody had insurance for terrorism. TRIA stands for Terrorist Risk Insurance Act. On your desk, I think there's a handout that kind of explains the TRIA Act of 2002. Since then, it's been reauthorized in 2005 and in 2007, and the one that we're under now expires December 31st of 2014, and so that's why we're bringing it to you today. When insurance companies started excluding the terrorist activities, the federal government got involved in it and introduced a reinsurance program that involved a public-private partnership, including the insured, the insurer, and the federal government. It only applies to catastrophic losses. I think in order for the federal government to get involved, the tipping point is over $100 million. I'm going to get into the specifics of the current program. As far as the numbers are concerned, I think there are some other speakers that are well positioned to speak to the insurance industry and their thoughts on it after I get done. Basically, it's a single terrorist act must cause at least $5 million in damage to be certified under TRIA. The aggregate insured loss from terrorism must exceed $100 million for the government coverage to begin. And individual insurers must pay a deductible equal to 20% of their earned premium before using TRIA the backstop. And then even then, insurers continue to pay 15% of additional claims and 85% of reimbursements. I think it might be easier if I just give you an example. If the losses totaled $100 million, which was the threshold for the federal government to be involved, the deductible that the insurance companies say they had a deductible of a $50 million premium that had been received over the previous 12 months for policies that have to do that covered lines of insurance on TRIA, well, their deductible would be 20% of that, so it'd be about $10 million. After that, if it went above $100 million, then the government would step in, and 15% of it would be paid by the insurance companies and 85% by the federal government. Once all the losses have been paid, it's by law that the federal government recoups the 100% of what they have put into this losses, and they do this by adding a surcharge to the policies after this. The taxpayer is basically neutral up to $27.5 billion. After that, then the Secretary Treasurer can further the surcharges and recoup as much as he wants, but it's required up to $27.5 billion. It's at his discretion after that. Overwhelmingly, the responsibility lies with the private industry on this, so the taxpayer is pretty much neutral. But it does spread out the risk across the industry. If this is not reauthorized, I'm afraid that the insurance industry, insurance companies, would probably go back to excluding terrorist activities and losses on their policies. So I ask for your support on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks on HCR 1019. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the body. HCR 1910 deals with the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act, or TRIA, has been described to you. TRIA was created by Congress following the terrorist attacks of 9/11. TRIA is a reinsurance mechanism that allows private insurance companies to provide coverage for certified acts of terrorism. After the attacks of 9/11, insurers recognized the threat of catastrophic terrorism was a unique risk. Using the law of large numbers and experience over time, insurance companies are very good at forecasting the risk of loss for events such as fire, tornado, lightning, and hurricane. Terrorism is not an event that can be accurately forecast. To ensure that coverage would be available, the federal government established this program, which enables insurance companies to spread losses from terrorist attacks throughout the private sector over time. In the event of an attack similar in magnitude to 9/11, the federal government would help cover losses in the short term, with the private sector repaying the government with interest over a longer period of time. TRIA has been an unqualified success in fostering a private market and ensuring coverage remains available at virtually no cost to the taxpayer. This program was not designed to protect insurers, but to ensure that coverage is available for the thousands of businesses that face an economic risk from terrorism. TRIA was originally acted in 2002 and has been revised and extended twice. It is now due to expire on December 31st, 2014. It is important that Congress act soon to reauthorize this program so insurance companies and businesses can continue to operate with the assurance that they have protection from acts of terrorism. Please join me in asking Congress to reauthorize the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Further remarks, Representative Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just real briefly, support the TRIA. This is, since 911, this is a very important tool in the toolbox of our insurance companies to provide coverage for us. To bring it down, why we need it for you all, if you've bought a commercial insurance policy, on your policy, there's the TRIA Act form that gives you coverage. And you're charged on your property or liability 1% to 2% of your premium. And if you don't want that coverage, you can sign a form off, reject it, and the company will refund your money to you. Work comp, it's a 2% of your work comp premium, and you cannot reject that coverage. You've got that coverage. So if your employee was traveling and the World Trade Center went down, they were there, they'd come under the Terrorism Act when they're traveling anywhere across the world. So It's really important that we have this for our companies to ensure our, especially our schools and our cities and our major buildings around the country. So please support this.
Thank you, sir. Further remarks on HCR 1019. Seeing none, the question before the House is final passage of House Bill, House Concurrent Resolution 1019. Those in favor of adopting it will vote yay. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. The member shall proceed to vote. Representative Hunoff. Granted, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Say, the husband of one of our favorite senators is here. More importantly, he's kind of a man without a political party. More importantly, he's my brother, Dan Hunoff, right up there.
Welcome, Dan Hunoff.
Representative Bartling and Heineman. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please shut that speaker off. The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there are 64 yeas, 3 nays.
HCR 1019, having received an affirmative vote of the majority of the members elect, is hereby declared passed and adopted.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 3, urging the members of the South Dakota Congressional Delegation to sponsor and support the Marketplace Fairness Act or similar legislation that would grant the state's authority to collect sales and use tax on remote sales. The Speaker has waived the committee referral.
Consideration of committee reports.
Representative Less moves that the reports of the standing committees on education on House Bill 1181, 1249, and 1005 of the House Journal, also Commerce and Energy on House Bill 1246 and 1106 of the House Journal, and Judiciary on House Bill 1127 and 1162, found on pages 388 to 399 of the House Journal, be adopted. Second.
Those in favor of the Lust motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. First reading of House bills. We have a House bill 1183 that had a fiscal impact statement that was finally attached. House bill 1183 will be assigned to State Affairs. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 39, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the regulation of certain open containers of alcoholic beverages. Senate Bill 125, an act to prohibit registered sex offenders from loitering in certain areas. Senate Bill 150, an act to allow use of cephalic airway devices by emergency medical technicians and to declare an emergency.
Speaker assigned Senate Bill 39 to Transportation, Senate Bill 125 to Judiciary, Senate Bill 150 to Health, Senate Bill 154 to State Affairs, Senate Bill 182 to Education. Second reading of House bills.
Representative Less moves that the balance of the calendar, including House Bill 1157, 1097, 1140, 1213, 1221, 1132, 1122, 1171, 1111, and Senate Bills 12, 64, 55, 27, 31, 32, 63, and 14 be deferred to Tuesday, February 18th, the 21st legislative day.
Those in favor of the Less motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. There being no objection, the House will revert to order business number 5, reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Appropriations respectfully reports that House Bill 1206 do pass, House Bill 1204 do pass as amended, and House Bill 1003, 1004, 1220, and 1235 were deferred to the 41st legislative late of day. Fred W. Romkema, Chair. Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that House Bill 1009 and 1010 were delivered to His Excellency the Governor for his approval at 9:35 a.m., February 13, 2014. Also, Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Office of Engrossing and Rolling has carefully compared House Bill 1048, 1053, and 1080 and finds the same correctly enrolled. Respectfully submitted, Brian Gosch, Chair.
Speaker signs an act to repeal certain provisions regarding property and casualty insurance. Speaker signs an act to revise certain provisions regarding the regulation of insurance rating organizations. Speaker signs an act to clarify the emergency personnel and driving records are not to include motor vehicle accidents resulting while engaged in the performance of their official duties. Signs an act to revise certain provisions concerning applications for absentee ballot and declare an emergency. Speaker signs an act to revise conditions where certain elections may be delayed for an emergency situation and to declare an emergency. Announcements. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be no tax meeting on Tuesday. The notice that you may have received on your desk is for next Thursday. No tax Tuesday. Thank you.
No tax on Tuesday. Representative Virtue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a House Transportation meeting at 10 o'clock on Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rounds.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tuesday morning, bright and early, 8 o'clock. Appropriations we're hearing from BAA, and EHR, Human Resources.
Thank you.
Come join us.
Sounds riveting. Appropriations, BIT, BIA. Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock, we will have House Local Government. Thank you.
Thank you. Further announcements, Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We will have a full slate of bills in House Ag and Natural Resource, 7:45 Tuesday morning. Thank you.
Representative Munsterman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Health and Human Services, Tuesday morning, 7:45. We'll pick up where we left off. A lot of great discussion.
Thank you. Further announcements, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a little more personal. We have six members of the senior class that are going to be termed out of this legislative body this year, and I remembered to bring my camera, so I ask Representative Carson, Representative Feinstein, Representative Northrup, Representative Lust, Representative Steele, and myself to gather up in front of the chamber, and we're going to ask Representative Cronin to shoot all three of us, or all six of us.
That would be a phrasing issue. Further announcements. Seeing none, Representative Steele. Get ready.
Mr. Speaker, I move we adjourn.
Those in favor of adjourning will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
We are adjourned.
South Dakota Public Broadcasting.